We're looking at the economic divide between superstar cities and smaller towns here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our country's 53 large metro areas, those with more than a million people, they represent just 2% of all the places across our country. But they accounted for nearly three-quarters of employment growth since the Great Recession. That's from the Brookings Institution. We're looking at the nuance in regional wealth disparities and what it means for families. Do you live in an area where you grew up in? What has changed in recent decades? How do you compare your standard of living now to your parents at that age? We're at 800-642-1234. Jonathan Rothwell is a principal economist at Gallup. He's based in Washington, D.C. He's also a visiting scholar at George Washington University, focusing on economic and social inequity. Jonathan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
So there is sometimes this understanding that certain regions in the nation do better than others. I'm thinking of those big coastal cities. And this is pointed to as reasons for other types of inequality. So sort this out for us. Where does this notion stem from?
Well, there have been a few pretty major forces that have been reshaping American geographic economic conditions. So one is the fairly long-term decline since in the manufacturing sector employment, which reached its peak in about 1979. And in the last, say, 10 years, been roughly 5 million lost jobs, although actually since the Great Recession, there's been somewhat of a recovery. So that's one pretty major factor, and that's disproportionately hit rural areas or areas outside of the largest metropolitan areas, with a few notable exceptions. San Jose is a really heavy manufacturing area and is obviously one of the richest parts of the country, if not world. But in general, that's certainly one major factor. And then two more recent phenomena, I think, have led people to really worry about regional economic inequalities. One is the rise of the opioid epidemic, which has played out disproportionately in smaller areas. And another is the surprising election of Donald Trump, who was able to win a fair amount of support in Midwestern swing states like Wisconsin, which had not voted Republican recently, and many people think in large part because of these economic factors.
So when you break down education or you break down quality of life and look at some of that nuance, you say that states are more alike now than they have ever been historically. How can you say that? What does that mean?
So, yeah, given all the things that I just said, you might think that, I agree that this is that regional inequality is a fairly major, causal factor in some of these things. But the reality is much more complex. And so states, just to look at average income at the state level and compare, states to one another, back in the 1920s, there were massive differences in the standards of living and the average standards of living between states. The richest states had roughly six times more income than the poorest states. And that gap has really converged quite a bit. Now it's closer to two to three time difference between the richest state and the poorest state. And that's been a fairly dramatic change that really happened going up to the 1980s. From 1920 to 1980, states really converged in terms of their standard of living, and they haven't really grown apart since then.
We're talking with Jonathan Rothwell. He's Gallup's principal economist, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel there is a diversity of income and occupations, race and class in your community? Why or why not? Did you live in the city and move to the country, or vice versa? What differences did you notice about incomes, education, and quality of life? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Jonathan, your research found that people living in smaller towns or smaller cities tended to rate the quality of their communities higher than people in big cities, in the superstar cities. What is going on there?
Yeah, so that's to me a very interesting finding. People are more likely to feel safe in their communities if they're living outside of these superstar metropolitan areas. They're more likely to rate the quality of their home and their community higher when asked in Gallup surveys. And I think a big part of that is their what social scientists call social capital networks are stronger. So there are crime rates are lower, rates of voluntary participation in civil society are higher. People are usually participating in religious congregations more frequently. They're more likely to give to charity. The percentage of children born to unmarried women is lower in these in smaller communities. So those are all, despite the fact that income tends to be lower in more rural communities and communities outside of those superstar metropolitan areas, in many ways the social fabric is tighter. And I think a really important maybe consequence of that is that it's actually easier to raise children to move up economically from a low starting place in rural, less populated areas than it is in the big cities.
What does housing have to do with that and the cost of housing?
I think it has a lot to do with it. It's much easier for parents to find neighborhoods that are predictive of high rates of upward mobility in the less populated areas. And the way that this is measured it was by some Harvard and Census Bureau economists who obtained data from the IRS on the incomes of people born around 1980, and then looked at what their parents' incomes were. And they compared people who were born at the 25th percentile of the national income distribution, so fairly low income, people born to fairly low income families, and then tracked where they ended up as adults and how that varied by neighborhood and how it varied by metropolitan area. And really, they found just a huge percentage of variation is explained by the neighborhood, and that neighborhoods in smaller places tend to do about as well as on average as neighborhoods in the very big cities, but cost much less to live there. And so the result is that parents have an opportunity to sort of buy their way into high upward mobility neighborhoods outside of big cities to a much greater extent.
Yeah, and that's interesting because you would think that it doesn't really perhaps matter that much whether you are in a very densely populated urban apartment with lots of community around you or in a sprawling, perhaps a smaller city suburb. What is the difference between that city and rural area in terms of quote unquote good neighborhood? How does that contribute to larger inequality?
Well, there certainly are many good neighborhoods in big superstar metropolitan areas, but the problem is they just are extremely expensive, as people know who live in Washington, D.C., New York, San Francisco. And only the richest parents can afford to live there, and often both parents are working two professional jobs and may not even be saving a great deal of money. Whereas if that same family moved to a smaller metropolitan area, they would be able to afford a much larger house in a very good school district. And that's one thing that is the data show is very important for children's upbringing. The school quality varies quite a bit from school to school and accounts for a large percentage of the variation in terms of where children end up. I think it's certainly a combination of what parents do at home and what opportunities their children have in terms of school. But if you also think about both parents working salary jobs that are very demanding in a big city in order to afford their mortgage or their rent, that means they have less time for childcare. And so they're relying on paid childcare, and the quality may not be as good as what they could give them if they worked fewer hours in a smaller area.
So you're saying that even with these high incomes you see in superstar cities, that may not even buy you the entry point into that quality of life you could achieve in a smaller city.
Right. I think there are real trade-offs. In a big city, it's very clear that you can earn more money, you can be more productive by any measure that economists look at, and you can have a more specialized job doing the work that exactly suits your education. And the more education you get, the more specialized you can get. But there really is that trade-off because the cost of living is so high and the opportunities for high-quality housing in a neighborhood that feels like a safe community are fairly narrow, that in many ways, if a lot of families decide to be better off outside of those big metropolitan areas. And so they either leave them or they don't move there in the first place. And that has kind of been a puzzle to economists because usually the focus is only on the income and earnings potential of big cities. And then they ask, well, why aren't people moving to the big cities if they could earn more money? And the point I'm making is that there's more to life than just maximizing the amount of money you can earn in your career. And those are things that people care about.
We're looking at regional differences between big metro superstar cities and what life is like in smaller communities, especially here in the heartland. Gallup's principal economist, Jonathan Rothwell, is our guide, and you can join in with your observations about city versus rural life at 800-642-1234. Do you feel there is a diversity of income and occupations and race and class in your community, in your neighborhood? Why or why not? Do you live in the big city and then move to a smaller town or vice versa? What differences did you notice about incomes, education, your quality of life, your stress level? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're learning about why regional inequality contributes little to, total inequality, the whole enchilada inequality. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Second-tier cities are thriving, and by some estimates, they're doing better than the coastal superstar cities. You can think New York, San Francisco, L.A. And another way to slice the data, the differences between people within a city like Los Angeles are a lot sharper than the differences between residents of California as a whole and residents of Wisconsin as a whole. Join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Do you live in the area you grew up in? What has changed in recent decades? How do you compare your standard of living now to your parents at that age? And do you see diversity in race, income, and class? Call in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Gallup principal economist Jonathan Rothwell is our guy. Jonathan, racial inequalities in cities are well documented. We feel them here in every level of city. What do the statistics say about race's connection to inequality in small cities and rural areas?
Well, one thing we know is that segregation tends to be considerably higher in the larger metropolitan areas. So Chicago and Atlanta are two examples of the most segregated metropolitan areas in the United States and have been for some time. Certainly New York City is in Washington, D.C. are highly segregated. And I think there are clear historical reasons for that. There was a mass migration of African Americans during the Jim Crow era to northern and midwestern cities, and because that migration happened at a time when Jim Crow policies and practices were rather intense, neighborhoods were explicitly created to house only African Americans or only white Americans. And we're still living with that legacy. Now, when it comes to smaller areas, they're just wasn't the same flow, obviously, of migrants. And so they're just those sorts of black-only neighborhoods or white-only neighborhoods didn't really emerge to the same extent. Not that there isn't any segregation in smaller areas, but it's just less extreme than in the big cities.
What do we know about communities where your neighbor is not white, or where there is more integration? What happens in those neighborhoods economically?
There's some fairly strong evidence that it's better for the African American or Hispanic families to grow up in communities that are more integrated. Their access to higher quality schools is better. The neighborhoods tend to be safer than they would be in totally segregated neighborhoods. Arguably, the quality of policing is fairer, and there's less discrimination along those lines. So that has clear and beneficial economic results. I think there's also very important psychological and social and civic benefits to integration that have been borne out across decades of research showing that white Americans are less biased, less prejudiced when they grow up in areas with other minority groups, and when they're exposed to say African Americans on a mundane basis, they have African American neighbors. They're much less likely to hold stereotypes that are negative toward African Americans.
We're talking with economist Jonathan Rothwell, and we're breaking down forms of inequality, how it stacks up in comparing state to state, region to region, neighborhood to neighborhood. You can join in at any point here at 800-642-1234. Did you move to a particular area for a better school, a lower cost of living? Perhaps a job move brought more money, but in an area with a higher cost of living. So how did you figure that out? What differences do you see between big and smaller communities? Join us at 800-642-1234. Jerry in Sun Prairie called in, couldn't stay with us, but he wanted to talk about transportation, Jonathan. He said that the farther away from the city you are, the more dependent you are on cars and more expensive forms of transportation. How do transportation options affect your quality of life, and how does that differ between the suburbs and the city?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, certainly if you have a long drive, which may be more likely in a smaller area, that's going to negatively affect your quality of life. But I would say in big cities, particularly in the so-called superstar cities, congestion is a major problem. And if you're commuting from the suburbs, it can take 45 minutes to an hour on a good day. Many people commute more than an hour. And that is a hugely negative aspect of their daily routines. And so I would argue that outside of those big cities, the transportation and commute experience is likely to be better, and it's easier to find housing closer to your job, even though if you're changing jobs, that could be a real problem, because there may be very few job opportunities or only one job that is really suitable. But if you do have that job and you want to find housing close to it, it's going to be easier and more affordable outside of those big cities.
Well, I'm thinking a little bit about the contradiction here, that if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere, or that you move to LA because your industry is there, and that, you know, if you can make it in that superstar city, that you can get by, that you could perhaps be able to get by anywhere. Is there anything to that?
I think there is, in the following sense. People can move to those cities and can really specialize and develop their skills and focus on a specific career and do very well. And that the data is clear about that. There are some real advantages to moving to those big cities. But it's once you leave those cities, I mean, it's not as clear that the skills will always find a similar job that pays the same wages outside of those areas for when they leave. I know several people who have left big cities to go back to smaller areas and have really struggled, despite the fact they were thriving at the top of their careers in the big cities. they just weren't able to find work that used those skills to the same extent.
Well, you started the hour talking about the decline of manufacturing, the Rust Belt, the opioid epidemic hitting rural areas, and the rise of President Trump. Those are three big things there that would impact your data, it seems, impact how you look at the heartland versus your large cities. So where is the disconnect, perhaps, or will it take time for the data to catch up on the impact of quality of life? Because looking specifically at the opioid epidemic, that is very costly for rural America, very costly for the smaller cities.
No doubt, and I would certainly never want to minimize that. And I'm doing some research right now with public health scholars at the University of Pittsburgh to better understand regional differences in opioid abuse and deaths. So I totally agree with the same with looking at political differences. But one thing that we need to keep in mind when considering kind of regional differences and how they play out is that the people are obviously different in different regions too. And so what I found when looking at who supported Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton in the lead up to the presidential election using Gallup data is that really once you control for things like age, race, ethnicity, and gender, and several other things you can observe about individuals, such as their level of education, that the regional differences explain very little. If you take somebody with the same demographic characteristics who lives in the suburbs of a major metropolitan area and consider somebody who looks just like him or her in a smaller area, their voting preferences are very similar.
Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Jonathan Rothwell is a principal economist at Gallup based in Washington, D.C. He's a visiting scholar at George Washington University. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Cherkent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.